This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on The Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3, KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
Good grief. Mono a mono. This is the way I like it. One-on-one with Doc O'Neill. Here we go. Doc, you were right out of the gate. You were fired up, apparently, about this this whole mess between equal pay. You need to turn the mics on. See,
that's why you hear my
it's the one-on-one
important stuff like that. If we don't turn on the mics, we don't have a show. That's why you're here.
That's why I'm here.
Okay, four topics, and yes, ready to rock and roll. Number one, four topics, four segments. Number one.
You're wound up.
Segment one.
All right.
Controversy, equal pay for women. Do we have it? What's the real status? Number two.
Okay.
Suggestion that perhaps the election coming up is the least important we're going to see in years. I'll tell you why.
Wow.
Segment three, Monica, and don't even have to say the last name.
Hey, now.
Segment four, and I want to presage this and tell you, stick around, because that's the most important segment we're going to do today. The tyranny of dead ideas.
Wow, I'm having trouble keeping up just in my notes.
Okay.
Take a breath.
Women's pay. Oh, no. I'm too fired up.
Okay, go nuts.
Women's pay. You've all heard the stats. 77 cents on the dollar. Now, Mike, I understand you might be okay with that, but if that's true,
come on now. Don't paint me with that brush.
Isn't that what you said in the other room?
Come on.
Anyway,
maybe.
If true, it's outrageous. Now, I want to take you through. I have gone and read some research on this.
This is what you do, by the way, data
analysis.
This
is what
I do. This is your wheelhouse.
I read analysis.
Okay.
And I believe in statistics, but that doesn't mean that I naively accept what I first see. You have to dig deep and find the total picture. Okay. Bureau of Labor Statistics, government agency, collects pretty good data, okay, finds that among women and men, both of whom who work full-time, women earn 81% of what men do.
Okay.
Pretty close to 77, so generally supportive, you know, plus or minus a little bit of rounding error. But that is obtained just by taking the gross pay of all the women who work full-time, the gross pay of all men who work full-time, and find one is 81% of the other.
Okay.
Let's dig a little bit more deeply.
That's not digging apples to apples, position to position. That's just
to
all of them.
That's whatever.
Okay.
First thing. Men are twice as likely as women to work over 40 hours a week.
Okay, there you go.
Even among those who are, now we're talking about those who work full time, okay? I think most of us would agree that people who work more hours should get paid more money than people who work less hours.
I like that idea, yes. Unless you're in fast food and you want $15 an hour.
Once you account for this, women earn 88 cents for every dollar.
Ooh, we're going up. We're going in the right direction. Okay.
Number two.
Yeah.
Marriage and children. Okay. Strong suggestion is that women who have kids will trade flexibility for income. Flexibility is a job benefit. Okay.
Right.
So how do you find out? How do you take that out? Well, one way is to look at the impact. What kind of money are women who have never been married earning relative to men? That figure turns out to be 96%.
Oh, we're right there. We're right there. We're in the plus or minus,
but And now we can go back. Let's look at the other women. Let's look at some of the factors.
Okay.
First of all, fields chosen. Women tend to pick fields like liberal arts as opposed to in relative numbers. Now, of course, there's exceptions on both sides, but far more men are in fields like engineering, accounting, and finance that pay more.
Yeah.
That's some of it.
In liberal arts, define that. What are we talking about? Are we talking about teachers?
I'm a sociology major, English.
But that's studying.
Arts and sciences. Okay.
Okay.
It's social sciences, humanities, English, music, art.
They don't pay squat.
Political science, I'm a sociology major, so 3 degrees in sociology, political science.
Show off.
Okay.
All right.
Another factor. Men are four times as likely as women to bargain over their salaries.
That's huge.
Yep.
That's huge. So essentially what you're saying is, here you got the job, here's your offer letter, men go, not so much, let's sharpen that pencil there, boss. And the women are going, oh, yay, okay, I got a job, essentially is what we're saying. Okay.
Yep. So that's a factor. Okay. So then the question is, long series of questions. Number one, should people get paid more who work more hours?
Yep.
I think most people say yes. Should people who get paid more who have more years of experience?
Yes.
And the difference between men and women in that regard is that women leave the labor force and have kids by choice, but as a result.
Statistically, we're not saying all women just bounce out when junior pops.
Generally speaking, men have a child. They generally don't leave the women workforce. Women do either briefly or for a longer period of time. So on average, they have less experience. They've been with the company longer, again, because of that child rearing experience.
Right.
Men take jobs with higher risk. 92% of all work-related deaths in 2012 were men.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay. So right. men take physically so riskier jobs. Yeah. I mean, we saw that in the recent argument in Phoenix over cutting police pay, and the police are saying, look, you know, we're in a risky job. We go towards danger. That's an argument that they use for and now of course police are mixed, but predominantly men, less so than in the past, but still. Men are also more likely to take jobs with highly fluctuating incomes. And when you take a job that whose income goes up and down, while you may go down a lot in 1 year, on average, you get paid a premium for assuming risk, which seems reasonable. Mm-hmm. You want a guaranteed salary forever flat, it's going to be, on average, lower than if you're willing to assume risk. So you account for all of that. And statistically, the numbers come out, women earn somewhere between 96 and 100 cents on the dollar.
Wow. See?
In other words, it either goes away.
So we do have equal pay, essentially. Essentially, we have equal pay.
Once you control for all these factors, and that's a statistical term, control, in other words, which means, in effect, you take account for it.
You compare apples to apples, essentially, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
The evidence seems to now, as a data analyst, I'm telling you that this is the most convincing evidence I've seen. As one who lives and dies by that, I'm willing to see another analysis that that takes into account for that differently, but that's my...
But let's say it is 96. Let's say it's 4% less, and people are still going to get their torches and pitchforks and say, we want the 4%. I spoke with our HR department here at KTAR. I did learn that it does, for the most part, because of child labor. Mm-hmm. I mean, excuse me, because of maternity. It costs more for an employer to employ a woman. So, and that's a generalization I understand, but for 4%, I think that generalization slides right in there. Am I right?
It could. And that 4%, I mean, statistics are imprecise. I'm saying somewhere between 96 and 100. And that's about as, you know, do an honest analysis, nothing's absolute. Now, let me close with just a quick thought. Why does this myth persist? I say, number one, poor understanding of statistics.
Right.
Two, Democrats playing to their base.
Right.
This is a political issue.
Of course.
Three, Republicans are scared of confronting it head on for fear of being perceived as anti-women.
That's right. And I'll tell you this. If you hear politicians squawking about inequality of pay, tell them to pound sand. Tell them you listen to the think tank and you know better. That's right. You know better. Hey, 2014, we are in an election year. It's like our Christmas that comes around every 2 years. Doc says that this is the least important election that's going to be had and coming up for many, many years. We'll discuss next on the Think Tank News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Doc, you're breaking my heart here. I get so excited around election time, and I know you do too.
I do.
I know you get fired up.
It's the Super Bowl.
It's our fun time. This is what we do. This is what we love to do. And you're telling me that this 2014 election is the least important election in years, plus or minus.
Let me tell you the reasoning. And by the way,
please,
this runs counter. If anybody gets any political mail or fundraising, the first thing, and doesn't matter which side it is, the first thing you're going to hear is how the country's on the precipice, and if the other side takes over, we're going to have a disaster. You give money because this is the most important election we're going to have. And it always has importance. But there is one reason, a big one, why this may ultimately be a lot less consequential than you think. And it is the following. If one party controls everything, that's a big deal. One side has the presidency and the other side has at least one House of Congress.
Okay.
Then you don't get very much happening. That's what we're in right now. It turns out that one party control, in other words, where the same party has the presidency and not one, but both houses of Congress, that's only happened for 8 years since 1980, out of the last 34. 1992, the first 2 years only of Bill Clinton's presidency. 2002 and 2004, 4 years of George W. Bush's presidency.
W.
And for President Obama, like President Clinton, the first 2 years only.
Dos años. Got it.
So under those circumstances, one party's in control of the whole operation, and they can make things happen. Now, to stop legislation of a president, you don't need both houses. You only need one. Okay, so what is our current circumstance? After 2014, 2014 election, in the beginning of 2015, Barack Obama, Democrat, will still be president of the United States.
Correct.
So you got a Democrat on one side. So the only question is, are the Republicans able to stop his agenda? By most reckoning, almost no Democrat anywhere has a plausible scenario for the Democrats to retake the House of Representatives.
No way.
Not unless something extraordinary happens between now and then, is that possible.
Correct.
So the Democrats have the presidency. The Republicans have the House of Representatives.
Might have the Senate.
Frankly, whether or not, in the scheme of things, whether or not the Republicans seize control of the Senate is relatively small potatoes.
Yeah, let's say they do. Let's say for argument's sake they do. We got House, Republicans have House, they have Senate, and no president.
You're going to get the exact same result as if the Democrats held the Senate in the short run, because either way, the president doesn't get his agenda through without bringing on board lots of Republicans.
And then, okay.
And there's no sign of that happening.
And let's say that the House and Senate go 100% Republican. Let's say it's just that it doesn't matter because everything gets stymied at the White House.
Nothing gets through. In other words, if they keep the House, now there may be longer term consequences in terms of 2017 or what happens thereafter. Absolutely. If the Republicans win more or less, that will impact whether or not they are likely to control the Senate 2 years from now or 4 years from now. So there's long-term significance, but in terms of the next, so I don't want to overwrite and say it doesn't mean anything, but in the next 2 years, I look at what's out there and it looks to me like gridlock under almost any plausible scenario.
So this is the best scenario for the president. Well, this is absolutely the best scenario for the president, because this is what he gets to do. He gets to still, let's say the Republicans take over the House and Senate, he still gets to say, look, it's all the Republicans' fault, and because they're sending me junk and they keep focusing on Obamacare, Benghazi, and the IRS. So now what he gets to do is go out and capitalize on his Democratic popularity and fundraise for the next 2 years.
Yeah, but
really?
It's pretty,
am I off on that?
I agree with all of that except for the part that seemed to imply that he'd like that. Believe me, I think he would love to have a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate. We could pursue immigration reform and any number of other things. But I think
handlers do. I think he'd be ready to go play golf every week.
And by the way, the other thing, the reason why there's no particular hope for the Democrats in the House is the sixth year of a presidency is almost always a disaster for the incumbent party.
He's already at like 40-something percent. He's going to,
that's all part of it. That's part of it. Sixth year is the doldrums. The only exception to that in recent history was 1998. The Republicans are trying to impeach President Clinton, and the citizenry reacted and said that was overreach.
Oh, I can't wait.
And
to get to
the Democrats won a surprise victory, one of the few times in the sixth year of a presidency where one party has come back and actually gained seats in the House.
So this in my eyes, and you're right, afterwards, we'll see what happens when January 1st or 20th or whenever they take over in 2015. But voting-wise, this only helps the Republicans. Because if somebody's voting, I'm going to vote. I'm going to do my duty here. I'm going to vote. I'm going to look at this, and I'm looking at, well, wait a second. Now the Republicans are going to take that. They're going to keep the House. And then even so, Barack Obama's still president. So literally nothing is going to get done because of partisan politics. So I don't vote.
The ones
that do vote are the blue hairs that are going to show up and just going to vote Republican anyway.
You're basically correct. And that is always true in off-year elections.
Okay,
people who come out and vote only in presidential elections are mostly Democrats. And in fact, when you compare the elections from year to year, from 2008, which was a big Democratic year, to 2 years later, which was a big Republican year, the biggest change was not in people changing their mind. The biggest change was who stayed home.
Yeah.
Democrats who voted for Obama in 2008, enough of them stayed home to change the outcome. We've mentioned the Senate. I do want to give you a quick handicap on that. The Republicans need to gain 6 seats mm-hmm. on that. There are 3 that I'll give them, and there's 4 that are up for grabs. I watch these 4. If you watch nothing else, watch these 4. The Republicans need to win 3 of them mm-hmm. to take over. They need 51. The Democrats only need 50 because Joe Biden breaks the tie.
Right.
Arkansas, Alaska, North Carolina, and Louisiana, all held by Democrats, all in traditionally Republican states.
Yeah.
Republicans need to win 3 out of 4. That's the whole ballgame here.
I think they will. I don't think that's because at least I don't want to say that the Democrats have shown their cards, but I think if Harry Reid gets on board with Pelosi, I think that they're going to run on pride with the numbers. And I'm throwing my hands in air quotes here on the numbers of Obamacare, and they're going to say, we have nothing to run for, nothing to hide. We just saw in Florida about a month and a half ago, that doesn't work. You can't run on it. If you run on it, you're done. And if they do, they're toast.
I think they will run it, but I'm not so sure.
Really? Yeah. Well, what do you mean?
You're plucking out 1 congressional seat in Florida. I'll give you that one, but I'm just because over time, I think the argument becomes stronger. More and more people are getting health care under the plan.
We just had a note this week that we're talking in the billions range of websites that don't work. We see this as a giant waste of money. I think that if you run, I would love that. I would love for every Democrat. I would love for every Republican. I would love to make this the central issue of the next 2 campaigns, Obamacare, and you're going to see a Republican landslide.
I think the Democrats are large. As of right now, it looks to me like they're largely going to endorse it, and the Republicans are going to try to get people excited about Benghazi, and I don't think it's going to work.
All right, we'll see what people think of Monica Lewinsky as well. That's coming up next right here on the Think Tank. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
I'm not going to lie, she looked pretty good on the cover. It's Vanity Fair, right? She was looking pretty good, Monica Lewinsky. Wasn't looking bad. The years have been good to her, I think.
Well,
She wasn't wearing a beret.
Yeah.
I'm talking about how she's looking. She's looking all right.
You know, here, I wanted to comment on the whole thing and maybe the last word. And by the way, I try when I bring up something as a topic, I try to be something where I have something to say that I haven't heard over and over. And there's a lot of piling going on. But here's what I want to say. And frankly, it's some admiration for her. But let me explain. First of all, let us acknowledge in her 20s, she did a bad thing, okay? Among 20-somethings, she's probably not alone, certainly not alone. Her problem was that the bad thing that she did, in terms of visibility, it was a bit of a doozy. It was out there for the world. But I think back—
By the way, we're talking about Monica Lewinsky, yes. The one that slept with Bill Clinton, yep. the lies, the impeachment, all that nonsense.
Yep,
yes. And the beret.
That.
Don't forget the beret.
I think back, she says, forget it, okay? Which I can't blame.
Come
but
on!
Let's think, I see of 3 actors, each progressively worse than the one before involved in that. Number one, the Clinton team. When this whole thing came out, some of the smartest political operatives in the world they sat around in the war room and said, how can we save the Clinton presidency?
Right.
And they did that by presenting Monica to us as an unbalanced stalker, somebody not completely there. So that's the image being presented by one side.
I want to back you up though, real quick. Let me back up. I want to back up, and I want to get your thoughts on this because I think that you take Bill Clinton's name off this, you take Monica Lewinsky's name off of this, you put CEO of X Corporation on this and intern in this. There's a giant sexual harassment thing. The CEO's looked upon as a predator, and he took advantage of, used his power to take advantage of somebody. Yep. I think if you go back and talk about bad people, Bill Clinton stands out in the number one. He took advantage. He was essentially what by today's standards would be predatory.
Well, could we return to that point?
Okay, please.
I wanted to get there.
He was the one that pops into my mind.
Right. So, I mean, basically, there was a PR war on the front end. On the one hand, you have the smartest people in the White House figuring out how they can portray it in a way that, frankly, saves the Clinton presidency. And they did it in part by presenting her in a light. And the way they present it was obviously successful because, on the other hand, on the other side, you have Monica herself, who basically can't say a word because for a lot of reasons. And she'd
she's
be overwhelmed.
Scared out of her tree, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, okay.
Worse.
Okay.
Worse, number two, Ken Starr.
Oh, I miss
let
Ken.
Me
Remember
explain.
Him?
He virtually kidnaps her, puts her in a hotel room with a bunch of FBI agents and a whole horde of lawyers, threatens her with like 25 years in prison if she doesn't talk, denies access to a lawyer. This is America, okay? And was not after justice. He was after Clinton, whatever it took to get him.
Well, duh. Yeah, of course he was.
Well, of course. A good prosecutor starts with a crime and tries to find out who did it. Ken Starr had an objective to get Clinton, and he went in search of a crime, and that is backwards. And as a libertarian,
I'm not a fan of Ken Starr, but let's replace. Let's take it to today again.
Right.
Let's take it to today and understand that you replace Monica with a bridge. It's the same thing. It's a political game.
Well,
period. This is all politics.
But this political game, and saying Ken Starr terrorized this young woman.
Oh, yeah.
Threatens her with 25 years in jail. Don't, if you walk out and get a lawyer, we're going to prosecute you. That, I don't think, should happen.
All
so
right.
He is my worst, not my second. Bad
Let's
Clinton.
Let's get the worst. I want
worst
the worst of all.
Ken Starr,
Tell me
the worst
top
of all,
the pyramid. Give
the
it
worst
me.
Of all, Linda Tripp is
Linda
a woman,
Tripp.
Older woman who befriends Monica Lewinsky. She pretends to be her friend, but in reality, she's a Republican operative, and she's the one who saved the dress. We'll need, you know, you'll need it, and this and that.
Yeah.
And she tapes phone calls with Monica, and her sole purpose is basically to feed into the, basically to get Clinton. But the thing that's the most awful about it is she did all of that by pretending to be her friend. That, I think, was the most despicable of all.
I don't think. I think Bill Clinton was the most despicable of all, period. He was a predator here by today's standards, and he took advantage, used his power. By the way, and understand this, he's a slick kind of guy. So I think, I think Jennifer Flowers and all this, I mean, these are, he has a list of this kind of, and by the way, he's not the only president.
Well,
he's not the only president to use his power for his advantage with the ladies, if you know what
I'll
I'm saying.
I'll get to that. Let me give you three reasons why I express a certain level
of
admiration for Monica.
Okay.
And that's a part. Number one, she shuts her mouth for over a decade. She largely does not try to cash in on what could be notoriety, even though it's clear she can't get a regular job. I mean, everything she ever applied before was somebody
Seriously.
Who wanted to use
right.
notoriety. I mean, would you hire Monica Lewinsky to work in your office for a reason other than using her as a spectacle?
Am I the boss? I don't
know.
No, I kid.
So she, and if you think about, you mentioned, you know, current day, would you become the latest Kardashian or whatever?
Right.
She had the opportunity to didn't do that and didn't. That
well,
to
I
me,
don't want to brush over that. Hold on. I don't want to brush over that because that's something we spoke about off air. I think that if Monica Lewinsky had, if she had had an affair with Barack Obama, so it was in today's terms, right? You can put W in there. I don't care where it is. She would be the next reality star. She would have ridden this wave to millions of dollars.
Or could have. And it's not, it's not clear to me that she couldn't have. I think she decided not to. Let me move on.
Back in the day. That was before things going viral and reality TV. Yeah. That was way before
that.
She
was
nonsense.
The first victim of the internet, really, in a way, because it was the very beginning of it.
Wow. Yeah, that's back in AOL. Come
point,
on. Let's see. We're on a curve here,
and
boss.
And apropos the whole issue about this is an unstable, you know, whatever woman, she goes out and gets a master's degree from the London School of Economics.
And what did Hillary call her?
By the way, in Britain, that's a number three institution in the country.
Nice.
You've got Oxford, you got Cambridge, and then you have what they call LSE, London School of Economics. That is not the characteristics of an idiot.
Right,
so
exactly.
That's point number two.
But she's still being characterized by the Clinton machine
well,
as an idiot.
I think they've shut up on it, and I think wisely. But,
okay.
But point number three, and this gets to some of what you've said, but she had the opportunity to play the victim and for 20 years has refused to do so. Never once did she say the president took advantage of me. I think women's groups, especially belatedly, would have run to her defense. She never claimed that. She consistently said, what I did was my own choice. And we are in an era where everybody has some reason why somebody else is to blame for your action. She chose not to do that, refused to be the victim, and I have to tell you that I have a certain level of admiration for that. And apropos the predator thing, what she said consistently, this was a consensual act. This was,
At 20 years old, you're looking at the President of the United States. You don't understand what a consensual act is, period. You don't. You
first
don't
of all, she wasn't 20. That wouldn't be out. She was 20. She was 23 to 24.
Call it 26.
Younger, but
seriously, the President of the
United
States.
Not a child.
Look, she's the victim here. Yeah. He was the predator, period. I don't understand how you can look at it any other way. Because, I assumed that when she left, she was paid off.
Well,
but apparently I was wrong in that. I thought she was.
Everybody has said, to me, predator, no, I don't think what Clinton did was at all admirable,
okay,
because he was married, but I don't, again, by the testimony of everybody that's involved, predatory would say that he went out and tricked her into something that she didn't want. And
by
she
today's
is clearly,
standards.
She's clearly said that wasn't the case.
By today's standards. This was how many years ago? 20 years ago? Come on.
Years,
by today's standards.
Yeah.
By today's standards. Like I said, back in the with the same analogy with the CEO and an intern. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter age difference, whatever it is. Power.
That is absolutely. That's despicable if you use power. But the evidence doesn't. He had a position. He was a charismatic guy, but there isn't. Yes.
Yeah.
And this wasn't the first or only one. I don't see the evidence that he used power. He didn't threaten her. He didn't have to.
He didn't offer her stuff. He did offer her stuff, by the way. There was an exchange of gifts and all that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
come on.
Trinkets.
Come on.
Trinkets.
Here's my trinket. It's got a Mercedes.
And by the way, I'm not expressing any admiration for what Clinton did whatsoever.
I wasn't saying you
were. But I think the word predatory is not consistent with what he said and not consistent with what she said and not consistent with. And if it were the case, she's had 20 years to reflect on that, and she's been consistent in what she said.
Oh, I tip of the hat to her.
Totally consensual act. She could have avoided blame for herself by playing that card, and she didn't do it, and that's the basis of my admiration.
Such a nice girl, that Monica, yes. All right, you're going to have to explain to me what the tyranny of bad ideas is. We're going to get to that next right here on the Think Tank News Talk, 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on The Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
All right, the tyranny of bad ideas.
Dead ideas.
What's bad ideas? What's a dead idea?
Dead idea is a phrase or a characterization of something that turns our brain off. When we hear that, this is a that, therefore I'm against it.
Okay,
I think for example, somebody raises an idea on a policy question, says this will improve our schools or our healthcare or you fill in the blank.
Right.
It'll improve somebody thing. And somebody immediately characterizes that, that's liberal or that's conservative or that's this or that's that.
I see what you're saying, right.
And everybody who sees themselves as not that, the brain goes off and they don't even listen to the idea.
Ah,
okay,
got it.
And it's more than just, but I think the big ones are these ideological labels. Okay. I, as a pragmatist, says, let's look at the proposal. Let's see whether it makes sense. Let's look at what we're doing. Let's see what the consequences of that. Some of the specific things that we hear that are part of our culture that are ultimately devastating. One of them we talked about last week. You hear this phrase, we need, quote, local control of schools. That's like, sort of an argument.
Oh, this with Common Core and all that nonsense.
So let's look, I would say, as a pragmatist, say, all right, what result do we have from local control of the schools? What does it give us? What does it, and in that particular case, last week we talked about, what does that do? That gives us 25 separate school bureaucracies with superintendent. It's the answer. Why does so much money in America get devoted to administration relative to other countries in the world? Because other countries in the world don't have 25,000 separate school districts. So
right.
Now, we can argue. Maybe somebody wants to take a different position and tell me why that's good. I'm fine with that. What I have a problem with is if you just say, that's not local control, that's bad. Tell me why it's bad. Okay?
Right. I think more localized. I think more a broad topic would be immigration. Mm-hmm. I think that is one that we talk about when you talk about amnesty. Immediately,
the word,
conservative brain shut off.
Right, and as opposed to saying, "All right, let's parse that. Now, what do you mean? What do you mean by amnesty?
Right.
Do we mean that we should throw everybody out? Do we mean that we deny citizenship? Do we mean that we deny driver's license? Let's take those separately. Let's talk about why we do or don't do them. But let's not let that one word be a cause of brain freeze. Let's talk about the issue. So, okay. Another an example, I think, of a tyrannical dead idea. Your company should take care of you. That has been one of the articles of faith that comes up big time in this country with respect to healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
So we have healthcare in this country that is largely driven by employment.
Yes.
And that notion, your company ought to take care of you, and you get it with it. Well, there's some immediate consequences of that. One is you lose your job, you're in trouble all of a sudden.
Right.
Some bad things can happen. Mm-hmm. Systemically, anybody who doesn't have a job for a large company is at risk of no health care. Even somebody who does have a job loses that. So in other words, I'm suggesting that we at least, I don't want to get into a whole discussion in detail about healthcare, but saying the notion that your company should be the one who takes care of you, it ought to at least be open to inspection. Another one, and this one I expect some pushback on because, that taxes always hurt the economy, okay? Let me draw a distinction, a personal anecdote, okay?
All right.
Discussion with my son, okay? He was talking about his friends go
How
out.
How old is your son?
My son is 17,
okay,
graduating from high school.
Okay, got it.
His friends go out every day, and they go over to Starbucks, and they pick up a $6,000, or no, sorry. They get themselves a Frappuccino, $6.50.
Yeah, they call it $5. Yeah.
Okay. And he was telling me, well, you know, that's wasteful. I'm not going to do that. And the discussion went further. This kid, 17 years old, works in a thrift store, okay? Mm-hmm. Matthew is his name. I said, by the way, Matthew, how much money have you saved? 17-year-old, you know what he's got in the bank?
What's that?
$20,000.
Nice! Yeah.
Now, here's the difference, okay? Spending waste is the Frappuccino,
okay?
I don't want the government buying people Frappuccinos. If he takes that $20,000 and spends it on tuition, which, by the way, I'm going to pay. But
nicely,
if he did, that's an investment. I'm saying there's things that government can do that are like the Frappuccino. That's waste. We need to cut those out. There's other things. And let me give you a couple of really good examples. One, GI Bill, post-World War II, we gave, out of gratitude was the initial motivation, every GI, total free college tuition, 4 years.
And marketing as well.
Including full tuition, whatever it was, okay?
Right.
We ended up with the most educated population on Earth, and we dominated the world for the next 40 years. Number two, the other thing we did was government spending, Marshall Plan. Could you imagine trying to do that now? We rebuilt Europe, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine now what people said? Well, we need that money for us. Why are we giving away? You know what we got for that? We got Europe, which was the most war-torn part of the world, drug us into two world wars over a 30-year period. For the last 70 years and counting, has basically been the most peaceful place on Earth. Peace, prosperity, and big markets for American products.
Okay.
So that's another way. So my point is,
okay,
I'm not arguing for all taxes. You know, taxes inherently bad. It's what you do with it that makes a difference. And if that is an investment, we have to look at what the return is going to be on that.
How do we get back to that? There is no way that I don't think it is a popular belief in our country that our tax dollars are being spent in a good way. That we are being frugal with our money, that our government is good stewards with our money.
Absolutely.
I don't think that
I agree with you, we're not always.
Okay. And I think that's the case. I think there's one simple way out of this, and I know it sounds kind of odd, but hear me out on this. I don't think taxes should be taken out of our paychecks at all in any way, shape, fashion, or form. I think they're due on April 15th, and that's when we pay them. Do you understand the change in mentality that our country would have if they wrote a check for their taxes on April 15th. Then we would maybe elect politicians that want to talk about a balanced checkbook.
I understand a lot of people wouldn't do it. April 15th would come, we wouldn't have the money, and then what do we do?
But do you see what I'm saying, though?
Make
we just
feel
take it out.
No.
We just take it out, and it's not, we don't see it, so we don't care. Then we hear, now million is bled into billion, billion is bled into trillion, and it's just white noise to us. And the government knows that to a large extent. That we can say somebody's hurting in Europe. Let's give them $1 billion. We're gonna guarantee $1 billion to them. No one bats an eyelash.
Where's the
instead
the
big, holds their
the
hands up and say, why are we getting money back?
Big money is stuff we're afraid of. You know,
like what?
Defense is a blank check. Why do we spend more money?
Defense budget in half.
Why do we spend more money than the next 26 countries put together? And 24 of those countries are our allies.
Well, China's the next one, I believe, and they just over 1/10, maybe 11 or 12% of what we spend on defense.
And I
budget.
Wouldn't regard them as an ally. They're not an enemy.
Well, they're
but
number
they're
kinda... number two on defense spending.
Yeah, yep.
They're number two in the world on defense spending, and they're just about.
I'm not so happy with the Russians. I'm wary of the Chinese, but not hostile, but wary. The rest of them are pretty much our friends.
We have over 250 military golf courses. So understand, we can cut defense in a big way. That again, going to it is understanding our government, even in defense, say, remember 9/11. So we say, remember 9/11. They will not. They.
And by the way, do you know that we spend an awful lot of money of our defense that the military has not asked for? It's thrown in. Well, look at the fight in Tucson. We want our jobs, right? Don't pull those. The military wants to pull those planes out of the Tucson Air Base,
right?
And Congress, the Congress barber down there, is putting an amendment to prohibit them from doing it because it's local jobs,
right? Okay, it's local jobs. Fine, but what I'm saying is that just speaks along to that narrative that we understand that our government has completely lost control of the purse strings. They've lost control in spending. And it's our fault. We keep reelecting the idiots.
Yep, yep. And 96% of them will get reelected this time.
Absolutely. They won't. Yep. Will not if you have to write a check on April 15th. I'm telling you. If you understand that,
my problem
away.
Is I know that my check won't bounce, but there's a lot of others that will.
Good. So there's a lot of a lot of tax evasion going on right now. When we go after them, we have a giant division called the IRS of our government that will come after and knock on your door.
Yeah. And if we didn't have that, then we'd be in trouble.
I always say the government can have my money when I'm done spending it.
When you're done.
How about that? Yeah. Check that out. But I do see that there are.
I'm saying we can't throw it all in with one brush. We got to look. Is this investment that we're going to get a return on, or is this frittering away something that doesn't give us a return? That's the distinction we have to make.
Then they need to sell it that way. Then
yeah.
We need to understand we're getting a return instead of throwing money down a hole.
Fair point.
Thanks, Doc. Appreciate it. Always fun. Love the mono-on-mono battles we get to have. Thanks for spending some time with us right here on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.